Thank you for choosing to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. In a myriad and plethora of other podcast conversations you could be choosing, we are really grateful that you chose to click on our link. And why should you choose to listen to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast? Well, not least because we have honest, open, insightful conversations with leaders from across the recruitment industry and beyond. We often invite people on who are leaders and experts in markets and sectors that we believe we can all truly learn from. Just a word of thanks to our sponsor, Pager, and to our proud partners, Needy and Inclusion Crowd, and a warm welcome to our new partner, Keybridge IT. More about all of those later on in the show. So without further ado, let's get to know this week's guest. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host of the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I am so excited to welcome to our global community today a guest all the way from Arizona in America. And she has got literally a wonder name and a wonderful story to tell you. You'll excuse the pun. This is Diane Prince. Those old enough to know, that's Wonder Woman. Diane Prince is a very revolutionary recruiter because she has been a founder and exiter. She has scaled and sold her businesses in the recruitment industry. It's a very rare thing to actually get somebody on the podcast that has actually done that successfully. She's also now executive coach to recruitment agency business owners across the globe. And today we are going to talk about how she did it, how she started a recruitment business in a niche that she knew nothing about, really. She didn't have any recruitment experience, really. So how did she manage to, within 6 years, build, scale, and sell her business for multi-million pounds? She's going to share her secrets with us today. Why do recruitment agency leaders that are listening now need to create a recurring revenue stream? How do we do that? And how do recruitment business owners scale their business successfully to achieve their goal? And then we're going to talk about something that is actually very poignant to a lot of people listening, in that a lot of people are looking to tackle the American market. So what's her advice for those recruiters who are going to either open a physical office in America or do it virtually from the UK, for example, or from Europe? What is her best advice for those recruiters? So you're in for a real treat, and I think it's going to be absolutely wonderful. So without further ado, let's jump into the episode. We are so proud at the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast to be sponsored by Pager. Pager helps recruiters to build personal brands, to identify new business opportunities, to attract those hard-to-find candidates, and to basically have better conversations. Now, you will have a large network that you want to build credibility with on LinkedIn, and sometimes posting content every day feels impossible. Now, that changes once you have Pager. Pager provides you with the ideas, the content, and the scheduling capability to produce daily content to build out your own personal brand in minutes, and for business development too. Pager identifies companies that are advertising jobs, have key hiring indicators such as funding rounds, mergers, acquisitions, or senior appointments, and then alerts you to this daily. Pager also enables you to write candidate-centric job adverts without bias in seconds. So once you advertise your job, Pager will then automatically create a branded post and publish it to LinkedIn without you even having to lift a finger. So when you want to actively source candidates, you can create complex Boolean strings in seconds. All you need to do is to provide the job title and location. Now, Pager is making thousands and thousands of recruiters smarter and faster. For more information, click on the link pager.co to book your demo, and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when inquiring. Now, back to the episode. This is Leisha Holmes, and I'm your host of the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. And I am so excited to welcome to our global community today somebody all the way over in one of our favorite destinations. We have a huge amount of listeners over in America, and it's actually secretly she might be Wonder Woman. Actually, I think you'll certainly get to know why that is the case, both in name and in person as well. This is the incredible Diane Prince, and she is the executive coach and founder to our amazing recruitment industry. Welcome to you today. How are you?
Misha. I'm great. So nice to finally meet you.
It's so nice to finally meet you. And I know that most people will be listening and not watching, but for anyone that is watching, you will notice that when Diane takes a sip of her cup of tea or coffee, whatever she's drinking, it's actually out of a Wonder Woman mug. There you go. She's living by her name. But for those who are not yet familiar with who you are, I don't know where they're hiding, please give a little bit of a bio as to who you are and what you do.
Okay, Leisha. Yeah, so I have been in the recruiting industry for forever and I've built and exited a couple of agencies as well as a couple of MSP businesses. I also had a clothing business. And
wow.
So I've been an entrepreneur for many years. And since 2015, I've been helping other people build their businesses. And now I have a coaching practice. I do executive coaching for specifically recruiting and staffing agency owners, helping them to build.
Fantastic. Which industries did you actually grow and scale and sell in your recruitment businesses?
So I was in staffing. And so it's really specific. It's a really specific niche that actually only exists in the States. Mm-hmm. It's called title insurance, but it's not insurance. It's a specific policy that you need when you buy real estate. I think they might have it in Australia too, but I'm not sure. So it's like a very, very specific niche. And then I've also later on, I've been in tech recruitment as well.
When you were on, we were talking about this before we started recording, you were on Sean Anderson's The Rug podcast most recently in 2024. And that I had actually secretly listened to you and I knew that was why I was going to ask you that, because I love the fact that you, although your niche was very niche and we don't have that in the UK, but there are listeners, you know, we do have a lot of listeners actually in Australia and New Zealand, as well as America, across Europe and Middle East, etc. There are so many people listening that are in verticals, and whatever your vertical might be, you know, you might be listening now. I mean, I'm a fairly niche recruiter because I recruit recruiters, right, in Manchester. That's quite niche. And there might be people doing actuarial, there might be people doing, you know, doctors, locums, you know, your niche is what makes you an expert in your field. So I love that that was your particular. Did you come from that background then? How did you end up doing such a vertical?
No, my dad did actually. So
that was right. You said that.
He was in the business and then he got my then husband a job in title insurance. So we knew that we had sort of an in that niche. Yeah.
It always helps if you've got somebody that you know in the industry that you can kind of go to for guidance and, you know, understand what the market drivers are and initiatives, etc. And so you were one of the very few, I don't know what the percentage is globally, but I think in the UK it's something like 0.04% of people that actually managed to sell and exit their business. Just give us a whistle stop tour of what timescale that was and how you did it.
Okay, yeah, and it's interesting because with that statistic, I'll say, because I wonder with that statistic, like, what is that, like all businesses or
just recruit, that's specifically recruitment owner businesses in the UK. That's the reality. It's very basically very unlikely that people will ever sell.
The way we went about it is we actually started with the idea of building a business that we could exit. So that's first. It wasn't let's start a temp agency. It was what if we could start a business that we could build and sell. That was and then from there we started thinking about ideas.
Okay.
And so the reason we arrived upon, and it was we were just always brainstorming and thinking about what could we do. And but when we it, that's why I think it's really important to know what your vision is and what you want to get out of it, because as you know, entrepreneurship is not easy. So I believe in figuring out what the end game is, like what you want out of it. And it doesn't have to be to sell it. It could be to build. There could be different reasons, but I feel like it's really important to know why so that you can build your business around that. And staffing is just, it is a business that you can exit. I have a list of 240 exits in the last 3 years in staffing, because there is a model and there is a formula that you can build and sell when you have recurring revenue. So that's how we came about the deciding on it. And then we built it based on that. Like we just started, like literally had, knew nothing. I had taught French. I had temped. My first temp assignment was actually in London.
And
when I was 19, for one night I poured beer at the Glassblower pub in Piccadilly Circus.
Oh, how cool.
And then somebody asked me, somebody was like, how fast do you type? And then I started temping. And so that's how I kind of knew what temp agencies were. And then we just, you know, we're both working full-time jobs and bought a book called How to Start a Temp Agency for Dummies, you know, and that is like, well, I don't know if you had them there, but they're like, but,
yeah, we have them for everything. They're amazing.
Yeah. So it's How to Start a Temp Agency for Dummies. And we, you know, that was pretty much what was available as far as, you know, any kind of content or coaching back then. And started writing a business. We wrote a business plan. And then I put an ad in. We put an ad in the Los Angeles Times for the kind of role that we were going to place. It was near my work. And I got a P.O. box, a post office box. So, you know, so I'd check it every day at lunch. And the first day that I got a resume, I cried. I couldn't believe someone sent me a resume. I quit my job the next day, and then we just started going, you know, one step at a time.
I absolutely love that I've asked you that question, because it's just the most, there's two things really, and I know we're going to come on and talk about the recurring revenue. I want to just pause that point. Don't worry, guys, we're going to come on to that. First and foremost, that I see so many people, particularly post-COVID, because I know this is way before COVID, that story, post-COVID, who have decided to set up on their own. Maybe they were furloughed, maybe they were made redundant, gone and set up on their own because there was no other option for them. So what they didn't do is what you've just said. And that's why they invariably then ring me and say, it's not working on my own. I need to go back into employment. And I think that's maybe why this statistic maybe seems quite high over here, or in terms of a low statistic of people that manage to successfully grow a recruitment business, because they don't have that vision. They don't do a business plan. They don't know what their end goal is. That's the truth, Diane. So I think that's the first really important point. And I think I love how, you know, you've positioned it that you actually, you had the relationship, obviously your dad was in the sector, et cetera, and you'd obviously been a temp, albeit, you know, maybe you were better at typing than pulling pints. Maybe that's what I've deduced from this. That you don't necessarily need to be an expert in your market. It's about choosing an area and the market where it is niche and there is opportunity there. I love the two things colliding. And over what period of time did you successfully scale and then sell? How many years was it? Wow. That's fast.
Yeah. And from literally like what you just said about not even knowing, because I mean, even like in the US, most people don't know what title insurance is. Like, it's just this weird kind of niche. And we had no idea, even, you know, like I didn't know really what the people did. So as we just learned from like, just started putting ads in the paper started interviewing people and just learned from that, and then started checking references and got our client that way from checking a reference. And so it just kind of, took off.
This is proper recruitment. I absolutely love that, because that's all the best recruiters, I think, learn their trade by asking the question, relevant questions to the candidate, and almost not being the experts and doing things properly and not cutting any corners. Wow. And then over 6 years, so did you put yourself out there to be bought, or did people start approaching you?
Yeah. So, early stages, people did approach us, but we knew that we weren't ready yet. Well, it's funny, because at one point, like for year one, my husband was like, if somebody offered us, I think he said like 100K or something like that, then I would totally sell. And I'm like, no, what are you kidding me? But we, you know, but I can sort of relate, because you get in the trenches and you're just like, you know, it's stressful. But we know we had a group of advisors. We knew we were ready. We were right now. There are other people who started around the same time as us who are now like billionaires, because they're still going. You know, so it's, but that's just not what the path that we wanted to take. Like, we wanted to like build and get out, and didn't really want us to keep working in it. So we would have like random offers kind of trickling in, or interest, but it was about year five when we got serious, and we hired an investment banker to put together our book, is called "Which Shops Your Deal Around," and we got serious about selling it then.
I love that. And I love the fact that you were wise enough and savvy enough to know what good looks like. And also the fact that you didn't compromise on what your ultimate vision was, which clearly, you know, you went on. And then you went on to set up a second business, because you said you've done it twice.
Yes, that was, and I don't recommend that.
Oh, why?
Because it's like, if you do it once, just do it. Just, you know, because, well, I think, it's, you know, sort of like going back to the poker table. Once you've once you've won big, it's like going back again, because even though you've done it and you know how to do it, there's all sorts of circumstances that can happen. But we did sell, and then, we had a non-compete. And then we had a couple of MSP businesses that we started. Mm-hmm. That was also kind of insane. So we're like always crazy entrepreneurs. And but then yes, we did start another company. I ended up, so we got divorced. I ended up taking that over. It was kind of crazy. I ended up selling that to the former chairman of Adecco, who's English.
Wow.
He was living in the States. So yeah.
Amazing.
But it, yeah.
And then since then, you've also launched a clothing line as well.
I did. Yes. That was pretty cool. I recruited, it was direct sales. So women sold in home parties. Mm-hmm. And, I recruited over 300 women to sell clothing in other people's living rooms. And it was,
wow.
That's how I ended up getting into coaching, because, so I took my recruiting experience and scaled the clothing, but then also it was kind of cool, cause I wasn't just placing them. I was recruiting them, but then also mentoring and coaching them.
Oh yeah. That's a really good sort of skill set to develop, isn't it? Which was more stressful? Running the recruitment companies or running 300 women as your franchisees?
I would say, well, the coaching and everything, the running, the recruiting, the 300 women, I loved, but it was all the inventory and that stuff. Like, I would never have inventory again. That was kind of a nightmare.
I'm sure. Definitely. Yeah. I love the portfolio that you've talked about, and you know, the diverse set of skills. I think it's really interesting. Now, don't worry, I'm going to lift the lid back up now. If we paused something that you said and you referred to, and I know it's something that you're very passionately talked about with Sean, the why we as recruitment leaders or recruiters, because we have plenty of recruiters listening, why we need to think about creating recurring revenue streams. So what can you just explain for the dummies over here, what do you mean by recurring revenue, and then how do we go about doing that?
Yes. So when I started my first agency, it was because we knew that staffing was a model. Or when I say staffing, I know it's called different things, different places, but contracting, interim, because that was a model that you actually can exit. And the reason, there's a few reasons. And one is that it brings recurring revenue, which means when you have, let's say temps, when you have temporary employees out on assignment, you have you're billing for that person every month, right?
Yep.
So you know what's coming in, so that when you're placing people, it's sort of like, you know, it might seem like small amounts at first, but when you stack them up, it become millions, you know, pretty quickly.
Yep.
So a lot of people think that they have this idea that they want to build a business that they can exit. And then they'll say, because I talk to recruiting agency owners all the time, every day, and they'll say, well, we're going to start with direct hire, permanent placement, because it's easier. And then we're going to add contracting.
The other way around, yeah.
It's generally not easier. It's harder to make that transition.
Yep.
And the thing is, with permanent placement, you're starting from scratch every month.
Every month.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you have recurring revenue, and you can do it also, like some of my clients do RPO and they have recurring revenue that way. So that is another way to do it. But when it's basically, you know that you're going to be able to pay your bills, you know that it's a saner way to run your business. It's also a healthier way to run your business, because, and I also believe in an anchor client strategy. So you diversify your client base so that you have major clients that you have the income streams that you know that you can rely on.
Yeah, which is what, but by the very notion of anchor. But in terms of developing that then into an RPO model, I've seen quite a few companies do that very successfully. So what would the starting points be? Let's say, I mean, my market, Rec to Rec, is notoriously difficult to do any recurring revenue other than creating an engagement model where people are paying you monthly upfront, a subscription model effectively, if you're going to be hiring multiple people across the businesses for them. But let's say we've got a listener now, a recruitment leader, and their model is more inclined to be permanent than temporary or contract. How do they create recurring revenue? Presumably it'll be through RPO, but give them a few little tips if you can. Without it's very hypothetical, I realize that, but give us a few tips of what they can do.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to look at the, and you know, one thing I would say is that you can be creative because you're an entrepreneur. Okay. So some people want like exactly like what is, you know, what do you do? But I always tell people like you might find different solutions that other people haven't created. But yeah, to get if, and another thing is like you can't necessarily make it work if it's not going to work, right? So if it's not a market that does work, I mean, my advice is find a market that does. If that's something that you do, if that's your goal. But I mean, but RPO is another model that can work. The only problem is that whereas with contract staffing, usually, and depending, like I know the laws here, I think it might be similar in Europe and the UK, but you can't legally, like here, you can't legally have temps, like corporate temps. So you're doing something that you're for your clients that they literally cannot do for themselves, which is another benefit of it. So yep. Still, I would say like, you know, I mean, there are RPO models that work. So yep. One is, you know, monthly fees per, like I've seen monthly fees per how many recs you have. Some are in totally embedded recruiting where you're also doing the HR and you're providing other
onboarding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, those are other ways that you can do it in other models, but you always want to look at like, okay, where does my business model support what my goals are?
Yeah.
Realistically.
And the only way, and I see what you're saying there, and I could think in terms of scalability, which obviously most recruitment business owners at some point want to scale, even that if that's small, you know, they don't necessarily want to become a huge conglomerate. They just want to scale up. This is a much safer way of doing it. That's what you're saying. It's that reassurance by having the recurring revenue to be able to do that. And it might mean diversifying into a different market. And if the model isn't conducive to doing something for contracts.
Yeah. It's like, you know, so I've also coached startup founders in the startup world, and in startup world, they call it product market fit. You know, it's your niche. You have to have that. You have to have the right product market fit or the right niche in order to make it work.
Yeah, no, without a shadow of a doubt. So in terms of where you're situated, I think a large number of your clients are over there as well. I don't know how many clients you have across the globe, but I'm seeing, because obviously I partner recruitment business owners as well. That's my day job. A large number of them, if they haven't already done so, are looking to tackle launching in America. So what would you say are the key? So this is, if we're listing, this is a UK-based recruitment company that is going to recruit from the UK into the US. And then part B would be those that may be thinking of actually coming on into America physically as a geography. What would your sort of do's and don'ts be for those two groups of people?
Yeah, I'm hearing that a lot too, because there's so much, you know, there's so much opportunity here. Yeah. Mm. So well, I would recommend knowing your niche, right? Like starting with your niche and looking at what is same if you're doing in the same, you're in your same country, but knowing like getting an idea of what your lowest hanging fruit will be, what will be your easiest entry. And then it's, you know, to set up, I mean, there's businesses that can help you set up. Like I partner with different employers of record who typically help people from the UK start in the US. So, and also, you know, I mean, especially since I've been on several UK podcasts lately. And so I get a lot of inquiries on that. So you can get, you know, like shameless plug, get a coach or somebody who can help you kind of understand the market. But, you know, I mean, typical questions I get too are like about locations. You want to understand too, like people says, spoke to an agency owner and they were going to go into Illinois where Chicago is, but you want to look at each state is specific, like each state specific laws, and some are more complicated than others. So if you're setting up operations, you want to be in a state where it's more friendly probably for your, you know, your own internal employees. So there's just, you know, you want to talk to a lawyer, you want to talk to an accountant, you want to get set up properly. But it can be done. And there's an employers of record handle, if you're doing contracting, they handle pretty much all of that in compliance.
So making sure that you do your research into your market, understanding where the low-hanging fruit is, I love that expression as well. And if you're actually going to get feet on the ground, you actually need to go and speak to expert lawyers and you know, contract specialists who understand the specific state rules that might mean it's easier to hire internally for yourself if you're actually going to hire in recruiters into your actual business, but also for your clients as well. I think there's definitely a few obvious things there, but also maybe things people haven't necessarily thought about too. And is the market, it's opportunist, isn't it? But I mean, what are the challenges in the American market? I mean, obviously we're recording this in 2024. You've got a big election coming up, as have we. How is the market looking?
I mean, okay, that's another question. So people are always asking that about the market. And it's a $218 billion market here. Mm-hmm. So even if the market is like, there's such an idea that the market is down, which it is. Also, still up from 2019. It's just that we had these insanely good crazy years, 21 and 22. So people are, you know, the market's so bad. But that's why I think you just have to look at like your whatever like tiny slice that you need in the market and just go for it. Like, you know, that's one thing too, is that I didn't know anything when I started. I didn't know about insurance or workers' comp, which, you know, or anything like that. I just did it. So I always feel like just go for it, because you will be able to figure it out. And there's people that can help you figure it out along the way.
So did you have a coach from the start? Like, did you have people supporting you, or did you just literally got on with it and learned from mistakes and from screwing up?
Yeah, because there wasn't like the coaches like didn't really exist anymore back then. So we had that book. We like talked to people who worked in staffing. You know, we took someone out to dinner, and then we had a group of advisors, but that was our lawyer and accountant. They didn't really know staff.
They didn't know recruitment.
We were members of the American Staffing Association. So that provided some education.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a good route, isn't it, for anyone that's looking to, I guess, build their network over there as well. They could look at doing that and incorporate that into their strategy. Well, it's been really insightful. It really has. And what's next for you then? Clothing brand? Have you got anything else? Got a book coming out?
No more clothing. Well, I wanted to say, because you asked which was more stressful. And when I had my clothing business, I was a solo founder, and that part was stressful. So that's part of why what led me to my coaching business is realizing I do work with teams and co-founders. Mm-hmm. And I also work with a lot of solo founders, because I realized how difficult it can be when you're trying to figure everything out on your own and not even have a sounding board. So So what I'm doing now, I do some executive coaching, which is obviously limited because of time. That's the one-on-one coaching. Mm-hmm. So I have a few slots that I reserve for that. I also have a group program, and my program is it's a bit different than other programs, where it's not like one specific, like, this is the way do LinkedIn outreach or whatever it is. So it's more based on my things that I draw from my experience and also what I've learned helping other agencies. So it's basically what I do is I help usually really good recruiters build a business around it based on what they want to get out of their lives. So I have other programs too. I actually have some courses that I just launched. One is that are like very affordable and ridiculously good value. There's how to start a temp agency, or how to add contracts.
So you've taken that book for dummies and you've made it. I love where this has segued into a whole different market for you. That's amazing.
Yes, I have. Yes, my version is out of that. Yes, for sure.
Fantastic. We'll make sure that there are links available. So presumably that's online, so anyone anywhere can access that. Presumably.
Yeah. And there's other like great tools too. There's an account executive profitability calculator. So I'm providing all these like easy tools that people can use that are going to help them to build. And if you go on my LinkedIn, I have the 5 secrets every recruiting entrepreneur needs to know. The link is there, and it's also at my website.
Really? And you know what I love is the fact that you've, and that's why I always like my guests to sort of give albeit a short biopsy, but you know, this is the evolution of you as a leader, of where you've come and you are now cherry picking all your best learns as an entrepreneur, and you're now sharing that and making that available to other people so that they can almost leapfrog the lessons that you've learned. And I love that whole business model. I think that's amazing. And you know, it's real respect to you, because you know, you've shown real sort of humility with how you created such amazing success, which, like I say, most people don't get to do, and you did. And that's absolutely tremendous. So thank you so much for sharing that story. And you know, I hope that even if it's just one leader that reaches out to you to say, how can you help me? They know that they're not, and a lot of people do feel quite isolated. Even if they've got a team of good people around them, they feel quite isolated as leaders. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's been really delightful to get to know you, Diane.
Yeah, absolutely, Leisha. And yeah, sometimes people say to me, I never thought it was possible to build an 8-figure business until I heard your story or whatever. So I do want people to know why not you? It is possible.
Of course.
You can do it if that's what if that's what you decide that you want to do.
If that's what you decide what you want to do, which I'm sure there've been plenty of people listening that are maybe on that very early journey, I'm sure that this will resonate with them. But you have been absolutely delightful. Thank you for joining us all the way from Arizona. I think you might be our first guest from Arizona, actually, which is very cool. And joining us on the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast. Thank you.
Absolutely. Bye, Leisha.
We are thrilled to welcome to the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast a new partner in KeyBridge IT. KeyBridge provide 24/7 support to all of their customers. Established in 2010, KeyBridge IT Solutions is a London-based, fully managed IT support and solutions provider. And for recruiters like me, we all need the IT expert to sort our problems out, whether it's with Microsoft Cloud, Microsoft 365, internet connectivity, security, Microsoft Azure. I mean, all these words actually mean nothing to me. What about you? But so much more than that. They work across many industries, not just recruitment, but if you're listening from the world of leisure or charity or finance or even marketing, they will be able to help. So click on the link in the podcast show and get to know KeyBridge IT. We are so proud to be partners of Needy, the gifting revolution. Here at Key Recruitment, we absolutely love to send out bespoke gifts to our new place candidates to welcome them in their new jobs, but also as an extra special thank you to clients or when a team is celebrating something really special. But to be honest, we were really fed up with dull or mediocre gifts that you could just buy on the high street that didn't really reflect who we are at Key Recruitment as a business. This is why we chose Needy. Needy source sustainably from the UK's best independent businesses, offering the most perfect array of bespoke gifts and experiences too. So no more boring bottles of plonk or rubbish boxes of chocolates. This is how you make your customers' day with a gift that really matters and shows that you really want to do something special for them. For more information on how psychology and AI forming to make the best gift experience for you, click on the link and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when ordering. The Recruiters Recruitment Podcast is thrilled to be partnering with Inclusion Crowd. Inclusion Crowd put the D into diversity, but do it disruptively. We love that. Really reflecting what we're about. I was introduced to Inclusion Crowd back in 2020, and I've been absolutely blown away with what they're doing to totally transform the recruitment and hiring sector. They believe at Inclusion Crowd that companies should be reflective of society, and that no matter who you are listening now, you have a story to tell. You have a contribution to make. An Inclusion Crowd educates you in allowing your voice to come out and share that story, but doing it in a way that educates your colleagues and your customers equally. Inclusion Crowd, like the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast, has clients all over the world, and they specialize in our industry. What we all want to do together is to maintain best practice and to raise industry standards to enable us to attract and retain the best talent but doing so inclusively and with true diversity. By doing this, by accomplishing a true EDI policy within your business, you will also retain the top talent as well as attract new talent, which is a win-win for everybody listening, making more profitable business and a much better industry, highly regarded. Inclusion Crowd are also the official awarding body for the Inclusion and Diversity Certification Mark within recruitment. We are so proud to be assisting and partnering Inclusion Crowd. If you want to know more information, please click on the link in this episode and remember to mention the Recruiters Recruitment Podcast when you do so. Now, back to the episode.